Good morning, and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren, along with Doug Wells. And Doug, just a fabulous weekend, and I'm looking at the forecast. It's going to be the same. Every day is going to be just like the last one. So we are heading toward a very fun week in Park City. Still got some fall color, and get out on your bike or whatever you recreate on, legs, whatever. We have a good show. Of course, we say that every week, but we mean it every week. And this week, we're going to start by talking about a really obscure interest rate that really affects all of us, the LIBOR rate. And we are going to have on the line with us Erin Arvidlund, calling in from Philadelphia. And she is the author of Open Secret, The Global Banking Conspiracy That Swindled Investors Out of Billions. And it may well include you and I if we borrowed, I don't know, for cars or for
just about anything.
Adjustable rate mortgages. Everything is based off this rate, and it was manipulated. And we'll hear about that.
And then we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about resort management and brew pubs. Our second guest is going to be Angela Cava, the director of the National Accounts for Resorts, Mountains, and Cities, which is a destination management company. And our final guest is going to be Evan Tentenbeck. He is the general manager of the new Wasatch Brew Pub in Sugar House, actually right down the street from my office in Sugar House. It looks like a great location, and we're going to hear from them about that opening and how things are doing down there. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Did you know that by shopping locally, you're supporting trail maintenance, our free bus system, and the many wonderful cultural and recreational opportunities in our community? When you shop or dine in Summit County, those dollars stay right here in Summit County. The Park City Chamber Bureau is pleased to support KPCW's locally grown radio show, Mountain Money. Remember, keep it local, keep it PC. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
And welcome back to Mountain Money, and we have on the line with us now Erin Arvidlund, and she's a business journalist who's worked for the Dow Jones Newswires, the Moscow Times, the Street.com, Barron's, and the New York Times. You've probably heard of her first book, Too Good to Be True, which was about Bernie Madoff and his scandal back in 2009. She's also worked in the hedge fund industry at two different firms, and she has written the book Open Secret, The Global Banking Conspiracy That Swindled Investors Out of Billions. Welcome, Erin, to Mountain Money.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure, and why don't you start first by explaining this interest rate. It's called LIBOR, and I first got acquainted with it, I guess, when I got an adjustable rate mortgage, and they said, well, your mortgage is based on the London Interbank lending rate, and I'm scratching my head wondering why. What is LIBOR, and
what is this?
And what all does it control in terms of interest rates?
Right. Okay. So yeah, not a wild animal, not something you hunt in the woods, but it's very similar to what we know as the Fed funds rate in this country, but it's essentially the same overnight lending rate that everybody else in the world uses. And as you know, the mortgage and investment business has been global for about at least a decade, if not more. So when Wall Street started packaging all of our different securities, our credit cards, our mortgages, our cell phone payments, and selling them overseas, they had to use a base interest rate that everybody else used, and that was one set in London. And it became really popular around 1986. That's when it became really the formalized rate that everybody uses.
And how is LIBOR determined?
You're not going to believe this, but essentially it was a gentleman's agreement. A bunch of guys in London from about a dozen or so banks would call each other up every morning and say, well, if you were to lend me $1 billion overnight, what would the rate be? And they would essentially make a guesstimate. It wasn't based on any
This isn't an algorithm that's fed through a computer?
Well, that would actually be more transparent than the way it was actually said. It was literally a bunch of guys calling each other on the phone, and that was the rate that was determining trillions of dollars worth of securities. It sounds almost impossible, but that's actually how it was set.
Now, let me ask you on this conversation, though. So if they have a conversation with their buddy banker, it says, if you were to lend me $1 billion overnight, what would you charge me? Does that then become binding if the guy on the other end of the phone says, okay, well, I'd like to borrow $1 billion, is that the rate he has to give it to him at?
No, it wasn't binding. The only thing it was used for was everybody would send their quoted rates into Reuters. Reuters would then turn around and publish, and that would be the rate for that particular day. And that's what, in other words, that was the wholesale rate they were setting among themselves. And then they would turn around and charge us LIBOR plus some premium on top of it. So the retail customer always has to pay a little bit more than LIBOR.
So we'll get into the scandal of it all in a minute. But first, let our listeners know how they have probably been affected by LIBOR. What interest rates that we pay in America are tied to LIBOR?
So a couple ways, actually. I'm not sure which one of you. Was it Larry or
I just asked the question, Larry.
Larry, okay. And which one of you had the adjustable rate mortgage? Because
I did.
That is, okay. That's
yeah, I'm not a fan of adjustable rate mortgages. So. Not Doug.
Yeah. that's where most Americans are familiar with LIBOR, because the banks then turn around and repackage our adjustable rate mortgages and sell them. The other way that we're affected is student loans. As you guys, I'm sure, talk about to your listeners, a lot of student loans are pegged to LIBOR plus some premium. And if you have a money market account, say Charles Schwab or Vanguard or Fidelity or something like that, they are investing your money in corporate paper, and they're getting paid from Wall Street banks LIBOR plus some premium. So guess what? If you were paying an adjustable rate mortgage, you might have been underpaying, you might have been overpaying, and same with some of your investments.
So, Aaron, I was just going to ask, if the banks charge LIBOR plus a premium and they were in cahoots with one another, why it seems to me they'd have an incentive to always keep that rate high.
You would think. But, in fact, it was really the way they were going about manipulating it was both up and down, depending on, for instance, will it help my bonus this year? Will it help the bank's bottom line? We have one trader, a guy by the name of Tom Hayes, who worked at Citi and UBS. He's actually going on trial in January, and he was moving it both up and down, not irrespective of whether it was hurting consumers one way or the other. He just wanted to make sure he got his $5 million bonus.
And I think we want to be careful, right, because his trial's this winter. We want to say that he allegedly was moving it up and down.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And also, I think the important thing is that these young guys, these traders, are being singled out as rogues. And they're nothing of the sort. This was standard operating procedure at all the different banks. And what I'm hoping will come out of this, you know, this sort of middleman and his trial, is that he'll point to the heads of, you know, the banks where he worked and say, this went much higher. This went much higher than me.
And I think getting back to the alleged point that I made earlier, I believe Barclays has admitted to wrongdoing and has agreed to pay a fine.
Right.
And now what's really happening is the criminal charge is being brought against individuals. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That is right.
And so what did Barclays admit to doing, and what was the fine that they paid?
Barclays admitted that their traders were rigging the rate, in particular during the financial crisis, so that they kept the rate artificially low to make the bank look healthier than it was. But what came out of that was that Barclays was really just the first to admit it. Lots of other panel banks also admitted that they were doing it. Royal Bank of Scotland, UBS, Rabobank, which is a small Dutch bank. So the fines actually have started to pile up. And they've all admitted that they were either manipulating the LIBOR rate up or down, and depending on, essentially, would it make the bank money?
Well, then how do we know how much retail customers were victimized? Because we speaking collectively, but me with my ARM, was maybe paying an artificially low rate that was manipulated down.
Don't say that too loud. Right. The bank may ask you for it to pay back the difference, Larry.
So were we victimized at all, and is there a way to quantify it?
Yeah, exactly. It's a very, very good question, because what if you underpaid on your adjustable rate mortgage? This is the billion-dollar question. Now, there are two lawsuits that I'm watching pretty closely, which I think will give you a sense. One has been filed by our two infamous housing agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They have filed suit against these Wall Street LIBOR panel banks, alleging damages of about $3 billion, saying that their mortgage customers were either overcharged or underpaid. And also Charles Schwab is suing, saying that their money market fund investors were underpaid. So that just gives you a flavor. If Fannie and Freddie are suing for damages of about $3 billion, that gives you a flavor of how much consumers might be owed.
Let me spend a little more time on the problem, and then we'll transition into the solution. So in your book, you share some examples of emails between the traders where they're essentially manipulating this rate. Why do you think these traders were so brazen and so careless?
This is really business as usual. A lot like the, shall we say, robo-signing scandals. Some of the other big hedge fund scandals that we've read about that came out of the financial crisis. That's why I really hesitate to blame these individual guys, because I think that this was what they were expected to do by bank management. And so that's what I feel about the individual guys. I don't think that they were doing this just to line their own pockets. I think this was bank policy, if that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you. So let's spend a little bit of time talking about the solution now. My understanding is LIBOR is still calculated the exact same way. Have there been any safeguards put in place to prevent this?
It's now being run by the New York Stock Exchange. So, excuse me, I'm hoping that that will improve things, but it just started in June.
And what else do you think would you like to see, having investigated this? Do you think there's additional steps we should be taking that we're not yet?
Aaron's struggling with a cold this morning, clearly.
Excuse me. Sorry, guys.
We've all been there with the microphone on, let me tell you.
So if it helps, my question was, after doing the investigation yourself, do you think there's other steps that should be taken that maybe are not yet being taken?
Yes, I think that the Federal Reserve should start using a different interest rate as their benchmark, not the LIBOR, but perhaps an overnight rate. or even the Fed funds rate, that would definitely go a long way towards getting rid of LIBOR.
Erin, if you'd like to grab a glass of water to clear your throat, that's okay. Larry and I can kind of comment on what you've said to date on that.
Please do. That'd be
okay.
Great.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, Doug, I have the, I guess I have the trifecta, a money market, a student loan, and an adjustable rate mortgage.
So you're hit on all
tied to LIBOR, and I guess my reaction is, I think it's great if they undercharged me, but it's the overcharging I wonder about. And Erin is multi-billion-dollar fines have been paid, and maybe there are more coming. Is any of that going to trickle back to the customers?
Boy, I really hope so. I'm kind of banking on it, to be honest, because I think that, it's the kind of thing where the LIBOR rate has become so entwined in our financial system that we almost can't stop using it, but it needs to be based on something else. It needs to be based on real transactions that actually happen, or we need to find a good substitute. The New York Stock Exchange is trying to do that. They're trying to base it on loans that actually take place between banks, but it really remains to be seen if they're going to be able to do that, because a lot of banks are now dropping out of the process. They're so afraid of litigation related to LIBOR. So it's almost like we have gotten to the point now where it's like we found out the equator is, maybe off by a few degrees, or, standard time is off a little bit. Like, we want to keep using it, but we've got to fix it.
My prediction, though, is don't plan on using it to buy any Christmas presents this year. It's probably going to be a couple years. And Larry, my prediction is, if you're lucky, it'll be enough for you and Carol to go out for a nice dinner somewhere.
Well, that's the thing. You usually get these big, thick printed on cheap paper notices from a law firm or from
and
a federal
those are the
court.
Guys that are going to make the money is
and,
the law firms.
Yeah, by the time it trickles through the law firms, you get a $6 credit once at some online thing.
It's pathetic. Erin, let me ask you about, this is not the first scandal that you've covered. There's a great quote that I love. A very famous person called you that idiot woman from Barron's. In 2001, you participated in writing a Barron's article about Bernie Madoff.
That's right.
And you really questioned, why did he need to have all this investor secrecy? And Madoff replied and called you that idiot woman from Barron's. Tell us about how that story came to be.
Oh, sure. That's a compliment, by the way, because he's...
I completely agree.
Thank you. I like to tell the story because I think it's still useful today. I wrote about Bernie Madoff for Barron's because his returns were just way too consistent. They were not sky high. they were 10, 11, 12% a year. But even in down years, he was making money. And that's part of the reason why he was so attractive. The other reason was that he told people, don't tell anyone I'm your money manager, it's just between us. Now, those are two enormous red flags, and these kinds of schemes are still happening. So when I wrote the story for Barron's in 2001, it came out and essentially nothing happened. And
Madoff talks about that. That was really the first time he got scared. I mean, when he did get caught, when he did go to trial, and when he talked to investigators, he said, I was shocked. I thought the gig was up at that point, but apparently it went on for seven more years unchecked.
That's right. These kinds of investment schemes still happen, but there are certainly red flags to look for. I try and write about them, every once in a while, just to remind people that Bernie Madoff happens on a smaller scale all over.
You know, it's an important topic. Let's probably wrap up with that question. You run a personal finance column in Philadelphia. And when you write about this topic, the red flags people should look for regarding their investments, what do you tell them?
Well, for one, people lose money. Money managers lose money. So when the market's down and if your portfolio is losing money, that's not a surprise. If your money manager is making money while everyone else is losing, that's fabulous, but you should start checking to see whether or not there's something funny going on. The second way to do that is make sure that you're getting statements from an independent third party, you know, like a brokerage firm that gives you transparent access. You know, don't just get the statements from the manager because they can make them up. And thirdly, keep your money in custody with a third party. Part of the reason that Bernie Madoff was able to get away with it was because he had control over his customers' assets. You should always have another party between your money manager and your money.
That's great advice. And you know what? Any one of those three would have protected folks from people like Bernie Madoff. Aaron, we thank you for joining us this morning. Our guest has been Aaron Arvalund. She's the author of Open Secret, The Global Banking Conspiracy That Swindled Investors Out of Billions. We appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much, Aaron. Interesting topic. And our weather forecast heading to a high of 66 today, 68 tomorrow, mid-60s all week long under sunny skies. Into the 30s at night, but not really freezing, depending on where you are in the mountains. Should be in the mid to upper 30s at night. This is KPCW Park City Mountain Money, and we will be back to talk with Angela Cava about the destination management business in Park City and around the West after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo's been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
KPCW presents It's a Beautiful Day, live at the Egyptian Theater, Friday and Saturday nights, October 10th and 11th. One of the biggest bands to break out of San Francisco's Summer of Love, It's a Beautiful Day combines rock, bluegrass, and classical music into one great show sponsored by KPCW. Tickets at parkcityshows.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. That was an interesting but a little bit of a scary topic that we just finished. It's amazing how such an important interest rate can be so easily manipulated.
You know, I feel a little victimized, but what can I do about it? I'm one of tens or hundreds of millions of people around the world.
The co-title here is The Conspiracy That Swindled Investors Out of Billions, and all of us listening today are part of that investor group. But we're going to switch gears now. We're going to talk about the resort management business. In studio with us now is Angela Cava. She is the new director of national accounts for RMC. Angela, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you.
So you joined RMC earlier this year. Tell us a little bit about your background and why you decided to join RMC.
Good morning. I have a background of 25 years in hospitality, specifically in distinctive different destination management. So I started my career with Marriott 25 years ago and moved into a role of a regional, really selling fun and sun destinations, and found myself really loving the mountains. So I decided to move over to Park City. It's a great destination to be in.
No kidding. And talk a little bit about RMC and what it does. It stands for Resorts, Mountains, and Cities in the destination management business. that does not mean that you're booking hotel rooms so much as you're creating events, creating activities for those who come to the mountains, cities, and resorts.
Thank you. I love to refer to RMC as meeting architects, really looking at the overall program agenda and creating those distinctive experiences. Our goal is to inspire attendees. So when they walk into a destination, they walk away with the true sense and feel of that destination, very motivated when they return back home.
So it's an example would be a convention comes here, let's say they're accountants. What you would do is create the fun for them around their meetings about dull things like accounting.
Is that right? Is a great example. Yes, definitely. The first thing we do is really look at what the program's goals are. Understanding the program goals and optimizing those outcomes is really the desired end result. So when we're talking to the meeting or program owner, we ask, you know, what are the goals of the program and how can we help message that to the attendees? The 2014 meeting trends, the number one trend is infusing local flavor, so really pulling through to that destination experience. And that trend turns out to be pulling through outdoor elements. And what greater place to do that than in the mountain destinations?
So what would be some examples? I run XYZ Corporation, and I've got all my sales managers here. What would you have them out doing?
I'm going to start right here in my backyard with Park City. We are known for the legacy of our athletes and really looking at the Olympic legacy, and there's no better way to do that than here in our own backyard. We spent many, many hours in training here. We utilize those athletes as speakers for meet and greets, and also looking at the Olympic Park right here. It's just a dynamic destination to infuse that local spirit into their program.
You know, the Olympic Park is an expensive venue to keep operated, and Utah's done a nice job of setting up an account to fund those expenses. And how important is the Utah Park? I mean, we compete. I mean, we don't think of it this way, or many of us don't. Those in the tourist business do. You guys view yourself competing Park City versus Aspen versus other locations. How important is an asset like the Olympic Park to that?
Oh, it is so important. All of our destinations in the mountains have that same opportunity to have great ski resorts, unbelievable hiking and biking in the summer. But the Olympic Legacy certainly offers something that's a true differentiator from destination to destination.
So you are located not just here. You're in Aspen, Colorado Springs, Denver, Salt Lake, Vail, Jackson. All around, and I see from your publicity, you have over 300 events a year. So, I mean, these are multi-day events. Do you have staff in every one of these cities?
We do. We have a large staff that operates out of each one of these different towns. And each one of our staff really bring through their own hospitality skill set, as they have such a love for the lifestyle of the mountains. We are currently in 9 offices. We were Rocky Mountain Connections and recently went through a name change of Resorts, Mountains, and Cities. And the reason why is we just opened our 9th office in Austin, Texas.
Which is actually where you started your career, right? At the Marriott in Austin?
Correct.
Is there a coincidence you joined the company and now there's an office in Austin?
So some would like to think so. However, Austin right now is
Did I grab the third rail there?
Austin right now is the number one fastest growing city in North America. It was interesting. I look back downtown at the skyline and it's changed so dramatically and will continue to change. There are currently 28 cranes in the air. You have hotels going up every single day. It's a very exciting and dynamic city, as it is the live music capital of the world, and also Formula One, the most premier racetrack in the entire world. Two awesome venues that are in that city that we will capitalize on most definitely.
What else do you think is going on there that allows them to be the fastest growing city? I mean, it takes good jobs as well to make that happen. Are there? I think Dell is located there, but who are the other big companies that are allowing the town to grow like that?
So Silicon Valley, its next opportunity is Silicon Hills, and that is in Austin, Texas. So definitely your high-tech folks are moving into Austin each and every day. Apple is bringing another 1,200 people into Austin, Texas. That is very exciting. And then there's many other groups that are also startup technology.
Larry's giving me a look like I asked that question so I could talk about Apple computers. Talking about no, I'm kidding.
Well, it's also a state capital and a university town, so it's just a natural concentration of brain power.
It is. We are the labor force that is in Austin, very high, well-educated. You know, you're pulling through a student body of UT of 70,000 students down at Texas State as well, so you have a very good labor pool that is very well high-educated. In addition to that, Dell is also opening up a new UT medical center that is also enhancing a lot of new jobs as well.
Well, let's bring it back to Park City and talk about what else you utilize around here. So say it's this time of year, you've got a group in and it's going to be sunny and lovely all week long. Besides going to Olympic Park, hearing from Olympic athletes who are training here, what are some other typical activities that would take place in a group meeting in our backyard here?
Well, again, looking at those program goals is really important. We tend to play in the sandbox of a lot of team building. So really understanding what the goals are to bring out leadership within the company and pulling through their dynamics. We do a lot of different team building that could be in the winter through different snow building opportunities or in the summer. We can definitely pull through any of those, whether you're hiking, biking, paintballing, rafting, and all of those. Our goal is to definitely make sure that we capitalize on every single element here in Park City. So it's not just one item. Could it be fly fishing in the Blue Ribbon waters? It could be many different things.
And I presume you're not staging all these events yourself. Your economic impact spreads to all the service providers who run fly fishing expeditions, who run mountain biking guided trips, etc., etc.
We place such a high value on our partners. Our vendors, we could not do it without them. We lean on them for service. And it's kind of interesting because we like to articulate that's what we do best. So 25 years ago, when Sean Thompson opened the company in Aspen, Colorado, her whole goal was high touch in a service element. To this day, we try to infuse that with our vendors to make sure we still give that service element. And service means something different to all of us around this table. So really understanding the corporation and what service means to them, and then communicating that effectively so we can deliver that through our vendors.
And over the years, RMC, if my notes are correct here, you guys have now grown to be the largest privately owned destination management firm in the United States. What do you think a couple of the keys to that have been? What allowed you to grow like that? Was there a lot of acquisitions or was it mostly organic growth?
Definitely organic growth, and it's exciting to see that. And a lot of our growth has to do with our own clients asking us to go in these different destinations. So we like to capitalize on success and move a very similar successful program into a different destination. So let's say that a group were to be in Aspen, and they would say, gosh, I love Aspen, but you know what? Tell me about Park City. This program next year can go to Park City. And the year after that, it can go to Lake Tahoe. And after that, it could rotate so easily to Jackson Hole. So really rotating that same client within the mountain region has allowed us to grow.
And what do the clients say about Park City? Why do they want to come here? And what do they say when they're packing up, getting ready to leave?
The most important thing when we talk about Park City is the accessibility and the ease of access. To get into Park City, we have over 95 flights a day, and that makes it so nice for the client to individually get in, and they can get up on the mountain that same day. So it's really accessibility.
It's the same sell the ski industry
correct
has.
Correct.
Okay. the destination business, does it have a slow period? Is mud season pretty dead, and is right now the kind of the month before ski season dead, or are you turning Park City and these other mountain towns into year-round destinations?
You know, our team was just getting together saying there really is not much of an off season anymore, which is great for all of us. However, there is an off season, as we all experience, you know, in that November timeframe, most definitely. And that's where Austin came into play. You know, our business model, if you will, is we are very busy, obviously, through the ski season and then more so in the summer. However, we do have that spring and fall, and that's when Austin, Texas is most busy. So it helps level out our book of business, and that was truly one of the decision drivers when opening up the Austin office.
And speaking of peaks and troughs in the season, what about Sundance? Is that a crazy busy time for you guys, or is it there's so many folks coming here for other reasons that it becomes less of a destination during that period of time?
It definitely enhances that crazy busy time. There are so many group dynamics, and they come to us asking for our innovative ideas to help really turn their particular goals and objectives into something new. What we tend to see a lot is people say, I'm bringing our top group attendee into Park City over Sundance so they can experience something. This is a recognition program, and how can you help elevate that? Last year, maybe they were at X Games in Aspen. So it's really trying something new and different and elevating the overall experience.
Do you have Sundance, part of the challenge is just getting tickets for the different events. Do you guys have a relationship with Sundance proper where when you have a client in, you can make it relatively easy to take care of all the Sundance type logistics?
That certainly is our goal, is to make ease of the buying process, and that's what we do best. So at destination management, we are experts within the actual destination. We can leverage our relationships, and we can capitalize on those opportunities to make the buying process seamless for the actual end user.
Now, you came out of the Marriott organization 25 or so years, so you learned pretty much everything about that organization, which has been so successful and has some roots in Utah. What did you take away from a quarter century of learning the Marriott way of business?
Number one, to be successful in this world today, I think we need to seek to understand. So listening skills is always something that's important. What is it that you're trying to walk away with when you leave Park City? What do you want the attendees to walk away with? How do you inspire that attendee, and how do you motivate them? So those are some key factors.
Very good. Well, thanks very much for joining us, and welcome to town, Angela Cava, the Director of National Accounts for RMC, now rebranded as Resorts, Mountains, and Cities, a destination management company. Thanks for joining us.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Angela, thanks for coming in. Our next guest is going to be Evan Tettenbeck, General Manager of the new Wasatch Brew Pub down in Sugar House. Stay tuned.
Come celebrate All Thanks Summit County at the 5th Annual Harvest Festival, Saturday, October 4th, from noon till 5 at the High Star Ranch in Camas. Enjoy local foods, Utah craft beers, kids activities, and over 30 local vendors. Featuring live music from Shane Jackman, Small House Strings, and Shay Zuro. Presented by KPCW supporters, the Uinta Headwaters RC&D Council, and Recycle Utah, your local nonprofit recycling center. More information at recycleutah.org.
Hello, this is Kristen Egan of Park City Realty Group, and I support KPCW. Every day, I listen to and especially appreciate local news and weather. This has helped me live, play, and sell real estate in the Park City area for the past 14 years. I can be reached at 435-714-1067.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. On the line with us is Evan Tettenbeck, General Manager of the new Wasatch Brew Pub in Sugar House. Evan, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
We're doing well. So I mentioned in the open that your new restaurant is right down the street from my office. You're on 2100 South. That whole Sugar House area is really getting revitalized. How long have you guys been looking at Sugar House as an area for a new location?
Oh, on and off for a long time, but officially right around the first of the year. And then we started building in March and initially expected to be opened in June, but for various reasons that got pushed back, and we ended up opening on officially opened on September 12th.
Well, to describe your building, Aaron. Evan, did you build something or renovate something? What would one expect when they step into this brew pub?
Well, it's all new construction. We're part of a larger development called Sugar House Crossing and the View Apartments. So it's a pretty large building right on the corner of Highland Drive and 2100 South. There's kind of retail on the first level, and then I believe four or five floors above of apartments. We are a very open space, basically one large dining floor and then kind of a mezzanine that overlooks the dining area with a nice long bar that runs parallel to Highland Drive and looks right out onto the street.
So, as I say, I know that area really well. There's been at least a dozen new restaurants that have opened up in the last year, right? They tore down a bunch of buildings. They've spent probably the last 2 years and have really done a very nice job. Where you guys are, that space is just gorgeous. But talk to us about how you view the competitive landscape. You know, the decision to go in where there's so many new restaurants versus a standalone where maybe you don't have as much competition within a 3-minute walk of your location.
Sure. Well, we're very excited to be here right in the heart of Sugar House with so much new development going on. Like I said, there are I believe right around a little over 200 apartments that are part of the building that we're in. There's also the Liberty Village apartments just not too far away to the west of us. I've heard that it's somewhere between 500 and 600 new living spaces that are going in right in this immediate vicinity. And yes, there are lots of other restaurants between fast food and maybe slightly more sit-down style like ourselves, but we're not afraid of the competition. We certainly welcome it, and we feel like there's more than enough business to go around in this area.
Now, if we go into this Wasatch Brew Pub, are we going to see the same menu we see at the Wasatch Brew Pub at the top of Main?
Yes, almost identical. The one biggest difference is that we have a pizza oven here, so there are a few pizzas on the menu in addition to all of the same items that you would see at the top of Main Street.
And is a brew pub today always a pub that has brewing in-house, or are you doing all the brewing down at the main brewery on Third West?
The vast majority of our brewing would be done down there at the co-op or up at on Main Street as well. There are a handful of beers that we have on draft that are brewed there. We have a very small brew house that we're calling actually a test lab. It's very tiny, but we will be putting out, you know, a limited number of probably bottled beers per year, which, you know, allows us to still call ourselves a brew pub and kind of reap the benefits of that definition.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. When you said the vast majority of the brewing's done off-site, are there zoning rules or alcohol rules that are beneficial to you if you do some of the brewing on-site?
As far as I know, I'm not aware of any zoning laws that change, or that would, you know, make it more beneficial. There certainly is a benefit to brewing on site, though, in that if we are able to acquire the right licenses from that, we're able to sell high alcohol beers out the door, which comes with a manufacturing license and a package agency license.
And this maybe gets into the area of trade secret, but I just know in talking to your founders years ago, the price of a bottle of beer is mostly in the bottle, not in the beer. And the advantage of a brew pub is you eliminate that entire packaging step?
Certainly, yeah. I think that's a pretty accurate assessment of it. I mean, it's still a very lucrative business to be in if you are packaging and distributing like that. But there's some very clear benefits to brewing in house and utilizing larger serving vessels, whether it's kegs or even larger serving tanks and things like that. But we, what you can't do in Utah is serve anything on draft over 4%. So that's where the bottles really come into play, where you can experiment with some new styles and get some higher alcohol beers out the door.
Now, do you have alcohol as well as beer? And is there some kind of Zion curtain built up there to hide it from impressionable eyes?
Well, that's a funny question you ask. We actually had to open with a standard restaurant license, which does have full liquor, full bar capabilities. But they do any new construction is required to have that so-called Zion curtain. So when we opened on the 12th, we did have some pretty large, kind of almost bomb shelter looking rooms to do our liquor dispensing, but as of, I believe it was the 23rd last, or maybe the 30th, I believe, we were granted a dining club license through the DABC, and so we were able to quote-unquote, tear down those walls.
Invoking Ronald Reagan, tear down that wall.
What does the dining club entail? When I've been in Utah since 98. When I first moved here, you had to, pay for a membership when you went to play. And those days are gone now. So what is the dining club?
So the actual licenses from those wonderful days are still basically exist, but the difference is that you're not required to charge memberships. So they're the dining club and a social club are still, remnants of those private club days. The dining club ultimately kind of comes across as a restaurant, but we are able to serve alcohol without the food requirement. That's one of the biggest differences between, say, a dining club and a restaurant. And then the other side is we are not allowed to have unaccompanied minors in the restaurant. So anyone under 21 has to be accompanied by an adult.
And are these licenses, is there a market for that? I'm imagining your grandfather didn't, so he had to buy a license from somebody else, or how does that happen?
No, we were actually granted one that came available. They are, new ones are released onto the market according to population growth. I'm not sure exactly who has the lucky job of having to do the math and sort that one out and decide when it's time to release new licenses. But there is a market for them as of July 1st this year. I don't know if you guys were aware, but there was a new law passed that does allow anyone that holds a license like that to sell it on the open market ultimately. And I have yet to hear of anyone actually going through the process of purchasing one, but we think that the free market will shake that one out.
Well, I have been here more than half my life now, and I still don't understand Utah liquor laws.
It sounds like Evan does, which is why I'm asking him all these questions. Sorry, yeah. We can switch gears now, Larry.
Well, we're just about out of time, but another exciting new thing in Sugar House is the trolley. There's now a light rail line for people who don't follow the mass transit developments of the Salt Lake Valley. There is now a lateral line that runs it's called a trolley, but it's basically a little train on rail tracks that runs up into the heart of Sugar House from some connection, I presume, with light rail, so that you can go north south all through the valley and then take a side up to Sugar House, which sounds like a great idea, but it doesn't sound like it's being embraced by that many riders. Is that a potential source of traffic for you, and are you as disappointed, I think, as its backers are, that not many people are using it?
You know, I'm optimistic for it. I think it's a new thing to this city. It's on its own currently. It's not the most. Let's see, how should I put this? Say if you were coming from, like, the Avenues or the University area, University of Utah area, you would have to take a pretty roundabout route to, you know, hop on the tracks, say, at Rice-Eccles Stadium, go downtown, get on another one that runs north-south, then around, you know, 2100 South or so, transfer again to what they're calling the S line that then drops you off right by Fairmont Park. So I look forward to the days when we have a better public transit system, let's say that much. But I'm not discouraged by the lack of riders. I think, like anything, it just will take some time to grow.
Well, and if it can be successful, I think the state of Utah has done everything they can once that route was decided on, which I think is the controversy. That they've done a beautiful job in how they've built it. They've spent a lot of money just making it nice. It's a nice place to jog. It's a nice place to walk. They've made it very welcoming. It's just, as you said, it's kind of a roundabout way to get from point A to point B from a lot of places in town.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully, you know, I know that eventually there's talk of that line connecting to something that would then run north-south along Highland Drive. I think the other day when Mayor Becker was here on our grand opening, he was discussing that it's been approved to put a line in on that path to, I believe, 1700 South, but we just don't have the funding yet, and that's always the fun part.
Okay, well, lots of changes happening down there. We wish you the best of success with the new Wasatch Brew Pub down in Sugar House. Evan, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery, we know what grows, ParkCityNursery.com. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And welcome back to the final moments of Mountain Money. I want to thank our guests, Aaron Arvidlund with the LIBOR book, Angela Kava, rather, with RMC Resorts, Mountains, and Cities, and Evan Tentenbeck of the new Wasatch Brew Pub in Sugar House. And Doug, Sugar House is really the first place in the valley that Park City people probably get off. There's a lot happening there. There's a Nordstrom Rack that gets a lot of Park City traffic.
I like a bargain, so you know I've been there.
and there's the Movies 10, where the movies are $1.
Truly
and a half.
Dollar theater still.
So there's fun things in the Sugar House area. Hey, I also want to thank our great sponsors, the Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, the Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Jones Waldo Holbrook and McDonough. And we are looking at a great week of weather coming up. Gorgeous every day.
I'm looking forward to going out and enjoying it.
Indeed. And that means highs in the mid-60s all week long. Not a chance. Not a prayer
well, don't,
for
don't
any
jinx
rain.
Us now.
This week we're going to be completely dry, and it's just going to be gorgeous. Now, coming up next week on Mountain Money, we're going to hear all about the life of the billionaires. Darrell West has written a book called Billionaires, Reflections on the Upper Crust. So if you want to know how the upper part of the upper 1% live. Stay tuned next week.
There was
week.
A TV show, right? Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. So this will be our version of that.
Well, yeah, and those were just mere millionaires. We're talking billionaires here who are a whole other class. We'll also talk with Carolyn Davis from San Francisco Design. And want to remind you, this is KPCW Park City. Our shows are will be posted online at kpcw.org.